The fourth principle is realize that you are not separate from your environment. And the affirmation for this is, I am one with my surroundings, aware of the connective energy between me and my world. I have talked a lot already about this need to remove the notion of our separateness. That's the invention of the ego. The ego needs to feel separate, otherwise it doesn't have any reason to be. So it constantly reinforces our separateness and our idea of being separate from everything. Well, one of the things that the ego, this idea we have of ourselves, has convinced us that we're separate from is the environment. And it's why we treat the environment the way we do. And you might be thinking, as you're listening to this, well, what's this got to do with manifesting? I mean, do I just have to join the Green Party and vote for Ralph Nader? I mean, what do I have to do? And it has nothing to do with that. Each of these principles throughout this entire program are really principles that are designed to get you to think of yourself in a new way. Because once you see yourself in this new light, the ability to do these things that you might have thought were not possible, that old idea that you can't do it begins to just gradually fade away. There's a word that's called a neologism, which is a term that defines a new word. Neo, new logism, word, new logic. And the word that I coined is, don't think of yourself as an organism in an environment, think of yourself as an environ organism. All one word, okay? Because literally that's what we are. And it's hard to shake this idea of being something that is in this world and separate from it, rather than being connected to all of it, because we can't see the connections. And so therefore we have a tendency to think of ourselves as separate. So let me try to bring it home. Let's say I want to describe walking across this room. So how can I describe walking across this room without describing what I am walking upon? Is it possible for me to give you a description of myself apart from my environment? In order to describe walking across this room, I have to describe not only walking, which is moving the legs forward one after the other, but I also have to describe what I am walking upon. The carpet, the ground, the pebbles, whatever it might be. It's not possible for me to just talk about my legs moving. If I just talk about my legs moving, I'm not talking about walking, am I? So in order to be able to walk, to describe walking, I must see myself as someone who is walking and someone who is walking upon something. Now, in addition to describing walking upon something, I must also describe what I am doing while I am walking. In order to be able to walk, I have to breathe, don't I? I can't describe walking across the room to someone who doesn't know what that is without describing my lungs inflating and deflating at every second. And what is it that is inflating and deflating? Why, it's the air. So I have to have air in order to describe walking across the room. So I have to be breathing. And what are all the other things that I have to describe as well? I can never, as long as I am in the physical plane, I can never describe myself without describing the environment that I am a part of. Now, what has this got to do with manifesting? If I am connected to my environment inextricably, I cannot be separated from my environment. The minute I do, I'm gone. I now enter that world that we call spirit, which has no environment, which is just everywhere at once. So in order to understand what manifesting is about, you have to understand that what you manifest or want to manifest is in the environment. And everything in the environment is also in you. You are already connected in the environment, in the physical world, to what it is you want to attract. And you can never separate yourself from it. It's like if you open up a book and look at the pages of the book, and and you say to somebody who's never read before or never seen a book, you try to describe what this is like. You say, what's there on the page? And you say, well, there's little letters. So are there just little letters? Little black letters? Little black pieces of ink? Little A's and B's and C's and D's? No, you can't describe the page of a book without describing the environment upon which the little black ink letters appear, can you? You need the background, don't you? You need the environment. You need the white page, the contrast, the opposite, the duality, in order to be able to describe reading. You have to have a background. Otherwise, you just got little letters floating around, and you can't read that. In order to see the stars at night, you have to have a black background in order to see them. Now, what I'm talking about here is really understanding the nature of the right-hand side of the room that I talked about earlier. When we're talking now about the right-hand side of the room, I'm talking about the physical plane. You have to understand the physical plane, your role in it, in order to escape it. And that's what this is about. It's about understanding the fundamental duality of your physical world and understanding that you are connected to it at all times. You can never separate yourself from it. The symbol for those who believe that we are in the environment in order to push it around is the bulldozer. The bulldozer is that instrument that we have devised that moves the earth around and cuts down the trees and destroys the forests and so on, not understanding that this is us, we are it. When we do too much of that, when we go to the extreme that we seem to be going to or could go to, then what happens is we are taking away the very thing that we need in order to sustain ourselves. If you take the air out, if you take that which gives us the nitrogen and the hydrogen and the oxygen, if you take that away, if you take the trees away, if you take the oceans and destroy the oceans and pollute the oceans, if you destroy all of the land, eventually what happens is you understand you cannot survive because you are connected to that. You have to have this. And there's only one air. There's only one fire. There's only one water. There's just little glasses of it. It's all one. And so seeing yourself as connected to the environment is one perspective, and seeing yourself as in the environment to push it around is another. Most of us have been raised on the idea that we're in the environment to push it around. And if we don't push it around, it will push us around. It will destroy us if we don't destroy it. And we don't get that when we are destroying it, we are destroying ourselves. And we are also destroying our ability to be able to bring to us, to attract to us, what it is that we would like in this way of manifesting when we see ourselves as separate from that which is in the world, the rest of the world. I'd like to take a look at the physical world, at the right-hand side of the room, and have you understand how it looks from a detached perspective. Have you ever seen a person with a front who doesn't have a back? Try to imagine such a thing. You know, a person with a nice front, and you turn around, and there's no back. Even if they're as anorexic as it gets, right? You still have a back, don't you? Can you imagine someone with an outside that doesn't have an inside? It's not possible, is it? In the physical plane, you always have the opposite. Now, the symbol for the physical plane is the sine wave, which has a crest, and then you go below the surface, and it has a trough, or a nadir and a valley, a top and a bottom. Now, this wave has its crest is always separate from its trough. You can see the top of a sine wave, that is the stuff that you're made up of. You can see the top of the wave, and you can see the bottom of a wave. But you can never just see the top. I used to teach metaphysics at the university, and I used to give an assignment to my class. I'd say, I want you to next week bring in a north pole of a magnet, and no south pole. And people would go and they slice it real thin. But no matter how thin you slice that magnet, you always have its opposite, don't you? It's the nature of the physical plane to be in duality. When they talk about enlightened beings, they're talking very often, you'll hear it referred to in the literature, you'll hear these people referred to as non-dual beings. People who have gone past the duality of the physical plane. And this is a big part of what we're going to do here in this program, is learn how to do that. All right? But you have to understand it first, that at the top of the wave and at the bottom of the wave, you have that which is separate, but always together. Just like a back and a front. They're separate, but you can't have one without the other. Just like a top and a bottom. And then when you take it into other contexts, just like happiness and unhappiness, just like light and dark. If it was always light, 24 hours a day, light, that was our reality. 24 hours a day, the light shines. Would we have a concept called darkness? We can only have a concept in the physical plane if we know its opposite. If it was always light, we wouldn't need a word like dark. It wouldn't exist. We wouldn't know such a thing. If everybody was always happy, would we have a concept called unhappiness? We wouldn't need any such thing, would we? If everybody's happy all the time, unhappiness wouldn't be something we talk about. Happiness and unhappiness go together. They're partners. Haven't you noticed in your life that when things are going really, really well, generally speaking, there's some caca on its way. Hasn't that generally been the case? I mean, isn't life hills and valleys in the physical plane? There's ups, and the good news is when you're in the caca, there's a hill coming. It's the only direction you can go. That's always been, it's this idea of always being happy 24 hours a day, all the time. It's like trying to find light 24 hours a day. The other thing, of course, is life and death. You know, we often have this idea that life and death are enemies to each other. The top of the wave, the bottom of the wave. Everything that has ever died must have what? Must have lived. You can't have death without life. And the reverse is always true. Every top has a bottom, every inside has an outside, every front has a back. Everyone who has ever lived also must have died. Death and life are partners. They're not enemies. We've gotten this idea that they're enemies, and we have books about how to slay it, and we worry about it, and it has this tremendous anxiety that we live with over whether we're going to live and how long we're going to live, and death is something that shouldn't happen. But death is just, the physical plane is life and death. Everything comes into the physical plane. It's quiet dust. Emily Dickinson had this wonderful poem. She said, "This quiet dust was gentlemen and ladies and lads and girls, was laughter and ability and sighing and frocks and curls." So simple. All this dust that you see, you hold it up in your hand. What was it before? This quiet dust, gentlemen and ladies, all of us. And so, what I'd like you to do now is to think of something in the physical plane that could never experience darkness. It's impossible for this to ever experience darkness. Couldn't happen. No matter how hard you tried, you could not have this thing experience darkness. And that would be the sun. Why is it that the sun could never experience darkness? Because the sun is the source of all light. Right? So there's an aha in here. There's a eureka. There's a, oh, I see. In order to be able to transcend the duality of the physical plane, you must go to your source. When you go to the source, That is, that which is the cause of you transcend the physical plane. And when you do, you create whatever it is you want to in the physical plane from the position of the source. You go out into the springtime or in the fall, you look at all of those magnificent colors out there, the reds and the blues and the oranges and the greens and the yellows, all of these fantastic colors of flowers and leaves and so on. And you ask yourself, what is the source of all of this color? And there's only one source of all color. It's called light. Light is the source of all color. Without light, there's no color. But there are many individualized expressions of that one source. You similarly have an essence. We are all individualized expressions of one essence, just like every flower and every color on every leaf is the same. An individualized expression of one light, we are an individualized expression of one essence. Now, what you call this essence isn't what it is anyway. We get nervous about it, and we fight wars over that, and we kill each other over what you call it. So if you want to call it God or soul or spirit or Kantenfloss or Louise, it doesn't make any difference what you call it. It's not what you call it. It just is. Call it the Tao, call it God, call it soul, call it spirit. I don't care what you call it, but come to know it. When you go to your source. Now, when people are learning to become sorcerers, they're even told, you will become a sorcerer. And we hear the word sorcerer, right away we think of witches, don't we? And witchcraft and sorcery. But the origin of the word source means, sorcerer means of the source. People who are of the source, who have gone to their source. When you go to your source, and how do you get to your source? Melville said that God's one and only voice is silence. Silence is your source. Silence is like the number zero. When you go to zero, you can't subtract anymore. Nor can you divide, can you? You can't divide zero. You just keep dividing it, and you just keep coming up with zero. The same is true of silence. There's only one silence. You don't get your own silence, and I get a silence, and you get a silence, any more than you get your own fire, and I get a separate fire, and you get a separate water, and you get separate water, and you get separate air, and I get separate air. There's just air. And there's just water. Different individualized expressions of it. We call it the Pacific, and we call it the Atlantic, and the St. Clair River, and Lake Superior, and all of these kinds of things. But it's just water. There's only one. The same thing is true of silence. The same thing is true of God. The same thing is true of your divine intelligence, whatever you want to call it. When you go to that source, that place that cannot be further divided, you now enter into the world of creation. You don't create because everything is already here. You enter the world of manifestation, the world of creation. And in this world, you become a co-creator. That is, not creation from the sense of bringing something from nowhere to here, but creation from the sense of attracting into your life and creating into your life that which has been missing. In order to further understand this, you have to think of like how you think you get here in the first place. We have this funny idea. This idea that you can divide the room, you know, on the right-hand side is the physical, and on the left-hand side is the spiritual. But before you send me any mail, I know that it's all one. I'm just doing this because I happen to still be in the physical plane. And we need duality in order to understand from the perspective of the ego. But my inner knowing is that there's no separation of spirit and matter. That God is in all things. And that there is individualized expressions of it. But that this intelligence doesn't ever particularize. It can't. That would mean that there's some place that it isn't the minute that it particularizes. And if it's universal, There can never be any place that it isn't. That's what universal means. One verse. So we have this myth that we live under that says we come into this world. And we really sort of think of ourselves as like a construction project. You know, like there's the spirit world. And we divide it up into befores and afters. So I'm here, but before I was here, I was nowhere. And then I went from nowhere, N-O-W-H-E-R-E, to now here, N-O-W-H-E-R-E, just a little different spacing. And now I'm in now here, and I look around, and after a while I have this thundering realization that I'm going back to nowhere, and then it's all the same. But somehow our intellect, our left brain, tells us we come from a spirit world, and then we come into this physical world, and then when we leave it and we die, we go back to a spirit world. Isn't that what we think? It's not like that at all. We have to shatter that myth. Here's the way to think of it. It's like, think of a plum tree. Plum tree has very interesting characteristics of it. Again, you go back to the seed, you know the seed inside of a plum. Is there plum essence in a plum seed? Is the essence of plumness in a plum seed? Has to be, doesn't it? So you put the seed into the ground, and you plant it, and all of a sudden, it starts breaking open, and roots develop, and they go under the ground. Is there plum essence in the roots? Isn't there? There has to be, doesn't there? Something in there is going to create plums. And then those roots grow and spread, and all of a sudden, a tree starts sprouting up above the surface. And there's a trunk. Is there plum essence in the trunk? Yeah. And then the trunk gets higher, and there are branches. And then the branches develop leaves. And then the leaves develop blossoms. And then the blossoms develop little buds. And then the little buds turn into little tiny plums. And then you let them stay on there for a while, and then they turn into purple plums or green plums or whatever their essence is. Now, we don't say, when we observe this phenomenon, that these plums showed up from the spirit essence world of plumness. Do we? We don't do that. We just look at the tree, and we observe it, and we watch the whole thing, and we realize that plum essence is in all of the thing, and we stand back, and we watch it, and we say, you know, the damn thing just plums. It just plums, like an apple tree. It just apples. So too are we like this. We are not separate from that spirit world. That separation is the thing we gotta get out of us. It's like someone could come back and look at the whole planet and say there's vegetation, there's rocks, there's minerals, there's rain, there's sunshine. Look at this thing from a distance. Look at it. Just watch it. And what happens? You watch it and you watch it and you watch it, and the damn thing just peoples. It just peoples. That's the way Alan Watts put it. It just simply peoples. We don't come into this world. We grow out of this world. We are a part of all of it, and we can never escape it. And once you know this, once you get this, that you weren't placed in here from this spirit world any more than plums were, or apples, or cockroaches, or anything. We are all in this thing called the environment together. And this divineness, this spirituality, this higher consciousness is a part of all of it. And we have to know that rather than separating it out. This world, that world, this world. Because our senses tell us that before you're here, you're nowhere. And after you leave here, you're gone. But our senses are not reliable at all. They misguide us all the time. They tell us that we're sitting here right now, and they say, you're sitting there still. You're not moving. That's what our senses tell us, don't we? We don't think we're moving. You think you're spinning right now? But yet you are, aren't you? Aren't we turning and spinning and hurling through space and all of that? Our senses tell us all of this stuff. It's not true. So we don't want to rely upon our senses. That's the intellect. We want to rely upon our heart and have this knowing that my essence is in every single aspect of myself. And that in order to transcend the prison of the duality of the physical plane, I go to my source. And when I go to my source, I get quiet, the place where I cannot further be divided. You see, our egos divide us up. We divide ourselves up by our races, by our sexes, by our age, by our appearances, by our economic class, by our languages. And then we divide ourselves up further within the country, by our communities, by our cities, by our states. And we divide ourselves further by our schools and our religious orientations and our food preferences and the shape of our eyes. And then we divide our individual selves up on the basis of what my mother thinks of me and what my father thinks of me and what I used to be and what I ought to be and what I maybe could become, but I can't because. And we keep dividing ourselves and dividing ourselves and dividing ourselves. That's the work of the ego. What we want to do is come up with a new symbol. Get rid of the bulldozer and come up with a new symbol. It's called a hologram. I have a definition of a hologram. A hologram is a three-dimensional photographic image obtained with laser beams. The essence of a hologram, you have them on your Visa cards and MasterCards and American Express. Let's give them all their own plug. A hologram, the interesting thing about a hologram is that you take one tiny little sliver off of an object and you project a laser beam through it, and it projects what? The whole, doesn't it? It projects the whole thing. You take just one little tiny slice of it like that, and you put this laser beam through it, and you look at it, and in every tiny infinitesimal piece of a hologram, the whole becomes projected with a laser beam. That's what a hologram is. Every individual part contains the whole. Now, what an interesting notion that is. Think of humanity as like a 6 billion piece hologram. And we take one piece out, and we put a laser beam through it, and we see all of humanity. That's what manifesting is like. You have to be able to see yourself as an individualized expression of the whole, of it all, and not see yourself as separate from anything in this environment. Now you start thinking about that thing I asked you to think about what would you like to manifest, and you realize that it is part of the hologram as well. Everything on the planet is part of the hologram. Now what you do is you say to yourself from your source, from your quiet space, the place that can't be further divided. You can't divide silence. You can't divide God. Gandhi said, in heaven there is no religion. Thank God. You can't divide spirituality. You can't organize spirituality. You can't divide any of this. You go to the source. When you go to the source, you go to zero. And from the perspective of the source, you look out on the physical plane and you put your attention on what it is that you would want to manifest, knowing that you are not separate from it, never have been, never could be. Even from the moment of your conception to the moment of your death, your life is not like this temporary experience between two eternal blacknesses. It's just like a parenthesis in eternity. But it doesn't begin here and end here. It is always. And so is everything in your environment. Just try detaching yourself from something in your environment. Just try describing yourself. Just try being for a moment separate from your environment. As a physical being, you can't do it. You need the air. You need the ground you walk on. You need the gravity that holds you down. But go to your source. And from the position of the source, you create all the light as the sun does. Indeed, you're not an organism in an environment. You are an organism-environment, or an environ-no-organism. Thank you. Thank you very much.
This is the end of side 6. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up side 5 for your next listening.